It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, yeah, so we might totally lose this because my computer is acting really stupid tonight.
Oh, well, that's...
We'll see what happens.
Entertaining. Is that your wallet?
No.
Oh.
That's nobody's wallet, actually. That's the producer's case for... I don't even remember.
I thought you were maybe setting me up to give someone money again.
No, that's her case. I think that's what she puts, like, her phone and headphones in and stuff when she goes to the gym.
Okay.
To work out. Anyway, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that's actually just an elaborate two-person LARP where we pretend to be podcasters every week. We put it online because we thought, why waste it? But really, this is role-playing. And I'm Tony.
And I'm William. And this is episode 179. If it were a real episode, it would be episode 179. Yeah.
We have stats and everything.
Yeah. You don't see it, but sometimes we even, roll dice.
Yes. To see whether we successfully speak into the microphone. Sometimes we miss. As that one episode, I rolled really poorly.
Yeah.
We finally got enough experience points to upgrade our equipment, but that was a while back.
I haven't leveled
up in a while.
I think it was a mistake for my character to have such a low humor score. Because I can never roll high enough.
I told you, like, that's not a good dump stat for podcasting. Like,
yeah, I should have listened to you. You're the expert. Yeah. Oh, well.
You'll note, yeah, I put almost all of my points in humor and charisma and nothing in strength and dexterity because I just have to lift a laptop.
Right.
Whereas, you don't know, William's character can freaking do backflips and stuff.
Yeah.
Really not useful when we're audio podcasting.
No. Also has a high score for rambling, which, why did I do that? I guess I thought it might be...
Well, we all had to take a flaw.
Yeah, I know, and it might be interesting to shake things up, but it just...
My flaw, of course, is too sexy.
Which also doesn't really... It's not a drawback when nobody can see you.
Oh, I think they can hear it. for those of you just joining us, relax. The whole idea here is we have a hat that we found. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people who are worth the effort, damn it, people who we love, email to this email, send an email to the hat with questions, comments, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them. That manifest physically within the hat. We draw those note cards out at random, read them on the air, talk about them until we're bored, move on to the next one. We do that for about an hour. That's the whole show.
And we never know what we're going to draw. Never know what we're going to talk about. In fact, we don't know what either person's going to say before we even start recording.
I usually know what you're going to say.
And we don't edit it either.
And see, what do you
press
do?
Record, press stop, and then post it. No editing. I don't know what she's doing.
Do not bite that cord.
Which, I don't know, I bring that up because I think it's interesting. I mean, a lot of podcasts are edited, obviously, or rehearsed. Or they know before they start everything that they're going to say, or they set up things they're going to say, but we don't do any of that.
Many of them still sound like they're not. We sound like we're not because we're not.
We really don't know what's going to happen when we press record.
So it's been 2 weeks because somebody had to go eat fried things on a stick.
No, I didn't do that.
So,
but I did go to the state fair.
How were your 2 weeks?
we went to the state fair, you know. And I
what do you eat at the state fair?
I don't eat anything at the state fair. I think we've
you
discussed
this. You spend the day
before.
There and don't eat?
I think we've discussed this before. When I was a kid, my folks always packed something for us to eat so we wouldn't, you know, because eating at the fair is expensive.
No, I get that. I get that.
And I'm so used to that, I don't even think of the fair as somewhere you go to eat.
But so what do you bring to the fair?
Well, you know, just like...
what do you bring this time?
Sandwiches and fruit and, you know, stuff you might have for a picnic or something. You know?
Well, you're like vegan, so I don't know how picnics work.
Well, and...
I assume you just gnaw on the lawn.
No, but given that there's not a lot at the fair I would eat... It kind of worked out, you know, as I got older that, well, I'm used to packing lunch when I go to the fair. I already don't really think of the fair as a place to eat stuff. So now that I wouldn't eat most of it anyway, it kind of
But you're
out.
Kind of famous for your enthusiasm for funnel cakes.
Why did you have to say that word?
Do you know I ate 1.5 of those on the 4th of July?
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, no, I found that there is a point at which you have eaten too much funnel cake. I never really hit it before, but I definitely hit it then, and I did not feel good.
It took you 1.5 to get to that point?
Yes.
That's...
Well, and in fairness, beforehand I had had a foot-long corn dog and a...
That might be a superpower of yours to eat 1.5.
Deep-fried, battered bratwurst on a stick. So I had had both of those before the 1.5.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before. We packed something, so I didn't eat anything there, really, except what we packed. And I go to the Ag building, I go to the Cultural building, I go to the 4-H building, you know, all the stuff. If anybody wants to know, they can go back and listen to our podcast around the same time, and you'll hear everything that I usually do at the fair, probably more than once. So I don't want to bore everybody with that. Otherwise, I just got some work done, and I did consume some media that, you know, I don't have anything interesting to say about it, so... You go ahead and talk about your 2 weeks, because I know you've got a lot to say.
I do, actually, this time. I think I mentioned before I'm done with Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
Playing Red Dead Redemption. Cannot keep horses alive. They keep getting killed.
There are mounts in the game, you mean?
Or? Yeah, I'm a cowboy. It's the Old West. I'm riding horses freaking everywhere.
I don't really know anything about the game, so...
It's basically Grand Theft Auto set in the Old West with
storyline. I think you said that.
So, yeah, people refer to it as Grand Theft Horse. But I can't keep the horses alive. Stuff happens out there, and my horse gets shot. And my horse got shot a few times. One time, wolves basically ate my horse out from under me. Because they were chasing me, and I was trying to shoot them fast enough, and they were biting at my horse, and then my horse just suddenly stopped dead.
You know, this might be a game that the other adult in my house would like to play, because, you know, Western, I like that. Horses.
I do not think she would.
Why?
It's had components that have made me very angry.
Oh, so it's very literally like Grand Theft Auto, except in the Old West.
No, but it's very literally like the Old West.
Oh, okay.
There has been only one actual interesting female character, and we had a whole mission where we had to rescue her from bad guys. Along with a lot of commentary about what the bad guys may or may not do to her and how she may or may not feel about it. I put the game down for a day or two after that mission.
I'm not sure that is really what the Old West was like, but okay.
Yeah, but I put the game down for a day or two after that.
Yeah.
So like with TV shows, when they do some crap like that, I'm like, you get one.
Well, you know...
If I see this happen again, I'm done with you.
You know, as I said, Arkham City... You know, constantly heard convicts talking about what they wanted to do to Catwoman if they could get her, what they wanted to do to Harley Quinn or whatever. It was really annoying.
But when that's aside, I'm actually kind of enjoying this game. It really has the Old West thing. So, like, I do a lot of just riding around on the plains on a horse. And I'm doing some hunting and things and collecting some flowers. And right, it's very cool. There's a lot of things where you don't have to shoot, although I'm kind of getting into the shooting now. But you pretty early on get a lasso, and so for a lot of human culprits and victims and things, you can either kill them or you can lasso them and hog tie them and put them on your horse.
Are you playing a particular character, some guy?
You are playing a very specific character, and that's part of the thing, is this game has a very specific focused story, and they don't even tell you all of it up front, even though it's about your character. And you can't really alter that story. There is a... there's a morality meter, so you can be good or you can be bad, and that'll influence side things and stuff. But the story is the story. And basically, you were an outlaw. Real bad outlaw. And then you stopped being an outlaw. And now, I still don't know the specifics at this point, but basically, the government has made a deal with you. I don't know if they have your wife and son hostage, or if they know the people who do and can control it, but whatever, the government has made a deal with you that if you go and retrieve slash kill an old outlaw buddy of yours, then they will get you back your wife and your son, or they will give you back your wife and your son, or whatever. And so you're going to find this guy who's now the head of his own gang and deal with him. And your initial attempts, which are just the start of the game, do not go well at all. And then after that, you have to be slower and more clever about it, and hijinks ensue.
I don't know. She still might like it. She really likes Western stuff a lot. She can overlook a lot of things to be able to ride a horse.
It is really good about that. And here's the thing. Yes, you have the possibility to be an evil guy or whatever, but sexism is not one of your issues, primarily. You do... I believe one time I heard him make the joke about there are two theories on how to win an argument with a woman, and neither one works. But other than that, he is... I told you, his wife and his son, he is very devoted.
To the degree
that there are, in saloons and stuff, prostitutes around. If you get near one and one tries to proposition you, the game all on its own is like, sorry, ma'am, I'm a married man. And he has this great relationship with this other female in the game, the one I said I liked. And it really does feel like there would be a romance here if he wasn't already married. And in fact, at one point he says, you remind me of my wife. But there's nothing like that going on. And I'm like,
interesting.
That's kind of cool for a change.
Yeah, that is kind of cool.
And there's a lot of shit you don't have to deal with there. And he's not a real stupid character, exactly. He's clearly an old cowboy and did some terrible stuff and things. But he's I like him. And I'm playing him good because I seem to do that these days. When I really think there's a fundamental difference, I will try playing it both, or I will sort of pick one at random if I'm worried I'll only play it once. But in game, there's too many games where it's like, you can play as a good guy, or you could play as a bad guy, but we figure most of you won't, so it won't. There's not much to that.
And it's not very interesting.
Yeah, or there's just not that much difference. Like, in this way, the outlaws will like you. In this way, the shopkeepers will give you discounts. Okay, whatever. There are weird things, though. Like, I'm on a mission, and this guy, I'm trying to prove I can be really badass with a gun and all this stuff, and I'm shooting things out of the air or whatever, and the guy who keeps challenging me gets mad, and so he draws a pistol on me. So I was like, okay, and immediately turned around, shot him, because he was going to shoot me. Failed the mission. Apparently, I wasn't supposed to kill him. I was just supposed to disarm him. And I'm like, how would I know that?
Yeah.
Apparently, it's because I was too fast. Like, he draws the weapon. If you wait, like, 2 seconds, it says up on the top of the screen. But I was like, okay, he pulled a gun on me. I'm going to shoot him. And I got him dead on.
How old is this game?
It's pretty old now. It's been a few years. I mean, it's young enough that it was on the 360, but it's pretty old for the 360. And yeah, there's lots of ones like that where, like, it turns out you're supposed to do it a specific way, and I didn't. Just recently, there are little side things that'll happen that are usually just, like, things going around town, and, like there'll be one where so-and-so robbed this store, this guy robbed the store, go hunt him down, or that guy stole my horse, go get it back. And one, this is another thing to take into mind, is there'll be a guy beating a woman in the street, usually a prostitute, and you go rescue her.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently you're not supposed to shoot the guy, though. Because I did that the other day. He was beating her. I was like, okay, I shot him. And somehow, like, all of these guys that were just watching suddenly were like, what are you doing? And suddenly I'm an outlaw. I have a bounty on me, and guys are shooting me. I was like, what happened? Meanwhile, though, it's still triggered, though, and she's thanking me. While the gunfire's going on, she's like, maybe there are some good men left. I was like, not for long.
Outlaw with a bounty on your head.
Exactly. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. Went and saw Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
Really liked it.
Yeah, we saw it also.
I think it's my favorite of the Marvel movies now. Full disclosure, I've still never seen The Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, don't think
technically that... it's part of the arc.
I know, but I don't think that's going to unseat anything.
But yeah, but I've seen every other Marvel if it's called something that Marvel Cinematic Universe or whatever.
Mm.
But the specific arc that started with Iron Man and is going to end, I believe, with Guardians of the Galaxy 3 in like 8 years. Of that arc, this is my favorite. Now. I think this beats out Avengers.
Well, it doesn't for me. It doesn't beat Iron Man.
The first?
Yeah, the first Iron Man doesn't beat it, because that'd be hard to beat.
So Avengers didn't beat the first Iron Man for you?
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
No.
Because Avengers was my favorite.
Avengers, it was Iron Man, Avengers, and everything else, including the other Iron Man movies, were almost on the same level.
I'd say that with Iron Man 2. Iron Man 3 I liked a fair bit
didn't
more.
Didn't like it. But Guardians... it probably beats Avengers, but still not Iron Man.
But so second favorite.
Yeah, I'd say.
It's
worth watching. I'd recommend it to anybody.
And don't get me wrong, I like most of the Marvel movies. This one has a very specific personality. And some of the credit has to go to the cast, but I think a lot of the credit is it was written and directed by James Gunn, who I feel has a very specific voice. Of this sort of cynical humor kind of thing. And I feel it's unfair to just say this movie was a lot funnier than the others. That's true, but I don't think that fully describes it. There was just... It felt like it had its own personality compared to a lot of the other ones.
Well, it had a lot of heart, and that's kind of...
And Chris Pratt's hilarious. I've now seen him in several places. He only plays one guy, but he does it really well, and it's a funny guy. So.
Well, I don't know. This... You're right about that, except this guy was a little more...
I'll give him some wiggle room.
A little more action hero kind of...
Well,
I mean,
and it was different when he was... There was a movie called Delivery Man where he was the best friend, and that guy was way smarter than either of these guys.
Oh.
So, I mean, there are... But it's still just... He doesn't have a lot of range. If you've seen him in Parks and Rec, you're not going to be like, oh, who is that? You're going to say, oh, look, Andy got buff. But, I mean, you know.
Well, that's interesting is right after he, or maybe it was while he was filming the movie, I don't know. But he looked a lot different, you know.
Yes.
And they even had a little bit where one of the other actors... When they cut to the scene, they're walking up some stairs, and the guy said, "So all you did was stop drinking beer?" He said, "Yeah, I just stopped, and I lost all this weight," which was kind of funny.
Also, I like Bradley Cooper as an actor. I think he's quite a good actor.
Oh yeah, I don't like him.
He picks easily 75% of the stuff he picks to be in is bad.
Well,
but,
and that might be it.
He is capable of being a good actor. Here's the thing. I don't remember what else, but there have been a few things. I think he's a better voice actor.
Well, the voice acting for Rocket
was amazing. And in other stuff he is
spectacular.
Too.
It was exceptional.
And that's the thing. You think, oh, voice acting is just of course a good screen actor. No, voice acting is a separate skill set.
Oh yeah, and it's hard.
And I do think he's a good screen actor, but I think he might be better as a voice actor. He's really good.
Yeah, the voice acting for Rocket was excellent. In fact, the most emotional, best character moment for me in the whole film was a moment that Rocket had.
He had a couple of them.
Well,
in a lot of ways, his character was way more 3D, no pun intended. Than
well, Groot and Rocket were the best characters that had the most dimensions to them, the most complex. Yeah. And there was one particular moment, I won't talk about it, but it was probably the most emotionally potent moment in the film. And I couldn't.
I know which one you mean, but there are actually two that I think.
Not
are
only the
close.
Voice acting was great, but the way they animated the character.
Yeah, no.
And just looking in the character's eyes, and it was like, I cannot believe that this is a CGI character, And this is probably the most effective emotional moment in this film so far, and that remained for the rest of the film. And
on the flip side...
Well, you know, actually, there were two of them now that you're thinking... There were a couple, and they were excellent. And you totally believe that character. And even though it's CGI, you totally believe
it. On the flip side, we had Gamora.
Well...
Who they forgot to really... They forgot to give her more than... They had a two-sentence story in the script that was going to be the abstract for them to flesh out a character, and then they forgot and just left the two-sentence story.
Yeah.
And Drax, who was just a walking joke, but he was funny.
Yeah, he was very funny, but...
He was, but he had nothing...
Not a lot going on there either, but yeah, Gamora was probably... But worse than Gamora was the female bad guy. She was completely wasted. Her talent was completely wasted.
I thought there was a lot more character there, and I thought Karen Gillan did an amazing job.
Well, she did a good job of what she had, but I thought that character was so...
No, I was way less impressed by Gamora. And Ronan... The ultimate bad guy, who had no character whatsoever, which is a terrible waste, because you know who was in there under that makeup?
Yeah.
It's fucking Lee Pace.
Yeah, but that character was a total throwaway.
He had nothing.
Two-dimensional.
They gave him 10 seconds in the beginning of interesting visuals that was supposed to be a character, but yeah.
Yeah, almost comically
and
bad.
And it was a waste, because Lee Pace is awesome. I didn't know it was him until I came home. For those of you who aren't familiar, Lee Pace was in most significantly Pushing Daisies, where he was incredible. He's also been in the recent Hobbit movies as Elven King, I don't know, something Dool. He also was in a great movie I saw called The Fall. He's just a really impressive actor. And I mean, and he did admirably, but you could have stuck me in there, and it would have been the same role. I mean,
yeah, that was the three instances for me, and I guess only two for you, but where the characters just didn't seem to be fleshed out or didn't do anything interesting with them, kind of took a little of a luster off of it in terms of making it as good as Iron Man. Because Iron Man, as I recall watching it, and every time I've watched it, is from start to finish, even though if you pay close attention, there's a few problems. It's so fun.
Yeah.
And it's got so much heart that you don't even care. But, and you just ride it all the way through.
Yeah.
This film had a lot of that too, but not enough of it for you not to notice that, gosh, that character's being wasted.
Well, and it may be a victim of ensemble films, because when you look at it, Avengers had that some too.
Yeah, that's good.
Honestly, we did not do hardly shit with Hulk. We did nothing with Hawkeye.
So what you're saying is it might, for what I'm criticizing the film for, I'm kind of comparing apples and oranges to compare it to Iron Man.
Well, what I'm saying is, well, I don't know. This may be a flaw in their plan, or this may be an obstacle in a film like that.
No, I agree.
That you didn't Iron Man, you had a very specific cast.
That's right.
And to be honest...
And a very clear lead.
The Thor movies, especially the second one, suffer in a similar way.
Yeah. You know, you're right. You're right.
So that could be... And, well, that didn't occur to me till just now. And what cracked me up is somebody, when they heard I saw it, they were like, oh, how was it? And they're asking all those questions before I can answer it all. And they're like, how was the soundtrack? And I was like, well, for reasons I can't explain, because it's really spoilery, the soundtrack is largely pop music from the 1970s. But trust me, that's cool.
Well, didn't people know that? I mean...
I had no idea. I had no idea.
I knew that going into it somehow, but...
I know, because the trailers always use whatever the fuck music they want in anything. So anything I hear in a trailer, I assume is not necessarily...
No, somehow I knew that was going to be the case, and...
But yeah, and there's story reasons for it, and it's pretty cool. In fact, the way they did it in the opening credits, I loved that. The opening credits sequence was awesome.
No, I totally agree, except I did not like the soundtrack at all. I mean, none of these songs, I could see how they were important to the character and emotionally resonating, and that was important, that was cool, but hardly any of the songs are songs that I've ever liked.
Well,
so they were kind of annoying, even though I didn't want them to be annoying, because I wanted to get into what the film was doing, but... I just have a particular opinion about these songs, and it sort of...
No, and I think I came from the same position as you, but I pulled it off, because I didn't really care about any of them, but I just loved the concept so much that I enjoyed it. I'm not particularly into those songs either. In fact, some of them really kind of annoy me. But the concept hit me. Also, we once again proved, regardless of the genre, if you need a somewhat charismatic but mostly just angry and scary redneck of any species, Michael Rooker's the only guy you can cast. Ever. He plays one role, and he's the only guy who can do it right.
You know,
So basically he played Merle, but slightly less racist and blue.
I don't know if we talked about this, but, listening to Kevin Smith's podcast, and he's talking to some people in the industry, and he pointed out someone, I think it was Neil Adams, pointed out that the reason that Guardians of the Galaxy even got made was because Marvel doesn't completely own a lot of its properties.
Yeah, yeah.
And so...
I think you talked about it on here.
Yeah.
So this is one that they don't have to share.
Right. It's
because it's a pretty obscure old comic.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else owns it. So it's like, okay, well, let's make a movie out of it, which is so smart. I mean, this is something that DC never does. DC never takes a chance. It never... Yeah. I don't know. Which I find that so frustrating.
And they liked it well enough that they greenlit Guardians 2 and gave it to James Gunn again before this came out.
So they had a good idea of how.
Yeah, and sure enough, it's
gangbusters. Well, that's a good. I mean, I recommend it to anybody.
It's a real nice cast, real good cast, and they all do quite commendably. Some of them are a little wasted, but they do quite.
No, that's true. I don't fault any of the actors for.
And some of them really brought something to it. There is weird shit. Like Jimon Hounsou is in this movie, and you will have no idea why. His part is not a part one would hire Jimon Hounsou for. Not because he can't do it, but because it's so beneath him. And is like 5 minutes of screen time total, maybe. But he does a really good job.
It's got a great look, too.
To be fair, they sort of have the same thing with Glenn Close, but for some reason that makes more sense to me. Yeah. I don't know.
The style of the movie is very cool. I mean, it's got... It's
fucking space sci-fi. We haven't really had good space sci-fi in a while.
It's really good.
With all the Marvel trimmings,
Almost even harkens back to... You get this slight kind of Buck Rogers feel to it, but it's not kitschy, you know? Somehow they struck the right balance there. It looks great.
It is. And it's soft enough, if you stop and you think about it, and since then I have. There's a lot of weird shit that doesn't make sense.
Oh, yeah.
Of logistics and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just is cool looking, and it was fun, and I really liked it. And romance is minimal. And I can't believe I live in a world now where I say that as, like, a great thing for it. But I was so enjoying the fact that other than one or two really awkward scenes, honestly.
Well, deliberately awkward, I think, too.
Yeah, but more... Well... Okay, the second one was hilarious. The first one, I was like, why did we even have that? But it kind of set up for the second one.
Yeah, yeah.
What I did was really heroic. Because I was worried. I was like, oh my God, what are we doing? And then it turned out to be funny.
Yeah.
But other than a couple of things like that, we basically didn't have sexual tension
and
romance
at
all.
That's right.
So refreshing.
Yeah, it really was. I agree. Totally agree.
Because at worst, it's creepy. And at best, we end up with a throwaway character, always female, who's literally on screen just for somebody to fall in love with and possibly rescue.
And she already already seemed like they weren't doing very much with her character. It would have been sad to say, "Oh, this is why," because they were just going
to. To be fair, we did rescue her a couple times, which was annoying. But
that's true. She was dambled a couple
times. But I mean, baby steps. I'm pleased for what they did. I also saw a different movie. I don't know if I mentioned this before, that I recently accidentally discovered an entire subgenre of movie that's basically lesbian films.
Yes, you did mention that.
I always thought they were just these little art house things, but no, they're like, I mean, I don't want to go like theatrical release mainstream, but these are real movies with real budgets and stuff. And I ended up, actually from some of the actresses I saw in a different one, watched this one that was a comedy called Then Came Lola. And what it is, which I think is really ingenious, is it's essentially a retelling of the film Run, Lola, Run. Remember that film?
Yeah, I remember. I didn't see it. But
you should. It's really amazing. Hmm. It's an action movie that involves the protagonist repeating the day over, repeating this specific situation over, because they fail and then they succeed. But Martin, and so it's sort of... it becomes this interesting look at the different ways the story can go. And this is, it's a comedy, so it's a little bit of satirizing that, but this is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was cute. It was funny. It's purposely, it's set in San Francisco, and pretty much all the characters involved are lesbians, with a couple of exceptions. And there are some sort of culturally specific jokes related to the GLBT community in San Francisco,
mm-hmm.
Which was kind of cute, and I'm like, I don't feel like I get this like I should, but it was still fun. But just in general, it was sweet, it was romantic, it was, and it was pretty funny, and I just like the ingenuity of it. It's totally skippable. If you never see it, you're fine. But it was just on Netflix, so, you know,
sure.
If you feel like it, it's kind of fun. And I'm still just finding this genre very interesting. And presumably there's also a gay male one of similar genre, so I should start looking into that.
Hmm.
Also, I started Weight Watchers.
Oh, yeah.
Last Monday. And actually, I lost 3 pounds in the first 12 hours.
Hmm.
Because on Sunday, I joined.
Because mm-hmm.
I didn't want to join too soon, because I didn't want to start giving them money for nothing. But I needed to join before the day I was going to start, so I could actually look at some of the charts and points and things.
Yeah.
So I joined that day, and I had to give my weight. We don't have a working scale here. I was planning on using the one at the gym, so I went there to actually use it. It's a mess. First of all, it's way off. Second of all, it's way variable. I got on it 3 times, and there was like a 15-pound difference.
Mm.
So I was like, that's not going to work. So I called my sister, because she's been doing this for a while. I said, can I just put what I'm pretty sure I weigh, and then, you know, if it adjusts, it adjusts when I weigh myself, when I find one. She's like, yeah, that's fine. So I put in what I was a few weeks before when I was at the doctor, which I'm probably going to be talking about this a lot, so let's just get to that out of there. 395 pounds.
Okay.
Was what it was. So then... And I moved my weigh-in date to the next day, which is Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So then Monday we go to work, and we have, like, 3 days a week or something. We actually have a nurse practitioner there that you can go to if you need assistance. And so she has a little office, and there's a scale in there. So I get in there, and I go to the scale, and that scale is showing what I actually think I weigh. And it's very stable. I can, like, move on it, and it's not... That was another thing the gym wanted. I could change it by like 10 pounds just by leaning. So I'm like, this will be my official scale. And the official weight on that scale was 392.
Hmm.
So I plugged that in. This doesn't set off alarm bells for Weight Watchers. No, it just makes them deliriously happy. I got a little trophy for my first loss. They're like, wow. You lost 3 pounds. Good job. And I'm like, no.
Probably not.
This should scare you. But yeah, so now I weigh myself every... week, every Monday, and as I go to work, and first thing I do is go there.
Sure.
So I got my points.
Mm-hmm.
What you get is your daily points,
mm-hmm.
and then you also have weekly points, and your weekly points are basically your, I call them cheat points. They're if on a particular day you're like, I really want to splurge, you've got these points. These are sort of your backup points.
Mm.
And here's the thing. Your daily points vary based on your weight, your age, your height, and your sex.
Hmm.
Different people, smaller people will get fewer points to start with. Older people will get fewer points. Things like this. But your weekly points are the same for everybody. And it's 49.
Hmm.
And those are what you have to play with, you know, if you want. So what I started with was 71 daily points.
Okay.
This is enormous.
That's a large number.
To give you perspective... My coworker, who started a couple weeks before me, she got 29 daily points to start.
Hmm.
My sister, I believe, was 33 when she started. She's much less now. There is a minimum, 26 daily points. You will never go below that. That's the bottom. So however skinny you get, you don't go below that. Producer did some research, found out there is a maximum as well. It is 71 daily points.
Oh.
So I could weigh 800 pounds. That's still how many I would get to start with.
Hmm.
Part of the thing between me and my coworker, I'm younger by a fair amount. Much bigger, of course. And I'm a guy. Apparently, being a guy, you just automatically get like 10 more daily points
hmm.
from that. because that's how it works. Guys lose weight faster. It's a hideous, obnoxious trick of nature. But so 71 points. This has proven to be very cool so far, because it, in order to stay in those points, I have to change virtually nothing.
Right.
Just very small stuff. Which I think is brilliant on their part, because as I lose weight, I will get fewer points. And so I'm just little tiny things I'm changing. A side item here, or not get quite as much food, or, you know, actually have a vegetable every once. And it's little stuff. And if it keeps going gradual, you know, by the time I'm down there eating kale salads twice a day, I won't even have noticed the change.
Right, that's right. Gradual.
So we'll see. All that being said, I ate whatever I wanted last week, weighed myself Monday, lost 5 pounds.
That's
I was
great.
Shocked. I didn't even think that was, like, in the range.
That's pretty cool.
So now I'm down to the 387, and we'll see. I'm sticking to it this week. Last week, I didn't use my cheat points, basically. One night, I used 5 of them, mostly because I just wanted to see when they reset.
So how much weight are you going to have to lose before they start reducing your points?
Producer looked that up, too. Apparently, I'm going to be around 345 when they're going to take away 1 point.
1 point.
So, and 345 will be the least I've weighed since high school.
Really?
Absolutely. Hmm. Even before, when I was losing the weight when I got the diabetes, the lowest I got was 380. Hmm. So before too long, I may have dropped to stuff I haven't hit in years. Hmm. So that'll be cool. As I said before, I believe I've committed to this till Thanksgiving. But if it works like this, I'll probably keep it going longer. I don't really know when I'm going to stop. I am going to stop. My sister, I think, has become a lifetime member or whatever, but I think at some point I'm going to knock it off. But I don't know when, if it continues to be easy. And it may actually teach me things. Okay, I shouldn't say teach me things. Get me in habits that are healthier ways to eat. Mm. It won't teach me. I already know what I should be doing. I'm just not doing it. So we'll have to see. But, I mean, I do worry at a certain point I have few enough points it actually becomes hard, and then I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
But, and I can't imagine, like, for my friend starting at 29, I'm like, I would have given up a week in. But this is easy. In fact...
Well, they probably don't eat as much food as you
That is true.
Already.
So yesterday's date night, my date night, I decide we're going to Longhorn Steakhouse.
Okay.
Sounds good. Do a lot of looking of what points are. I basically scribble down everything I might want to eat and how many points it is on a piece of paper. And then I, like, here's how many points I'll have. Let's start doing some math. but I was careful that day. Pretty small breakfast, pretty small lunch. So I knew I was going to have 43 points left the other day. So I started doing the math and everything. Here's what I came up with. And it was exactly 43 points. Mixed green salad with raspberry vinaigrette. And then a 12-ounce prime rib.
Boy.
And a side of their steakhouse mac and cheese, which has, like, bacon in it and stuff. It's so crazy. They brought me that plate. I'm just like, I fucking love Weight Watchers. Oh, and horseradish sauce. I have to say that because technically the horseradish sauce cost me 2 points.
12 ounces. How can you even eat that?
In the past, I would have done 16. This is one of the
16?
Things. 16 was my normal. Because why wouldn't I?
Man, I don't know.
Well, no, but this
is
the point.
I ate steak, I never had anything more than like a... I mean, all the steaks I ate were small. I never had anything.
But no, but this is the point. This is the little change in this. If I had gone before not worrying about it would have been 16 ounces. The salad would have had a much heavier dressing on it. And I probably would have ate some of the bread and butter, which I didn't. Just the little stuff. but anyway, no, the point, the joke there is, so I order that, and I told them, I'm like, I know exactly what I want. I literally researched it. Here's exactly what I want. And then Trish orders, and Trish orders whatever the heck she wants. Way less than me. She orders a tiny, much leaner steak. She orders a side of broccoli.
What is a tiny steak?
I think that one was 8 ounce.
Yeah, that sounds unless more it's like
a fillet, that's the smallest you're going to get in a place. Most steak sizes are 8, 12, or 16. And then if you get into like T-bones and porterhouses, it can get crazier.
No, I mean, whatever
the steak you're going to get are 8, 12,
whatever
or
16. The smallest is, that's what I got. Yeah. And I was perfectly, sometimes I didn't even finish that. I mean, I just could never eat very
much. And she only ate half of hers. Yeah, she took the rest home.
That's the way, I mean, as we've discussed, I'm really not much of a meat eater. So even when I ate it regularly and thought that I was a meat eater, I didn't eat.
I feel like you're completely missing the point of
eat
what I'm
16
saying.
Ounce steak. Well, no, I'm not missing
like
the point.
You're very distracted.
I get it
here.
I appreciate, you know, that you had to only make a small change and everything, but and it is distracting how
Trish,
huge a steak
Trish
you eat.
When she eats normally was way less
no,
than
no
me.
that's right.
Although she did have bread.
It just well, okay.
So there.
Well, you had macaroni. That's a pasta. Oh, that's so a lot
good.
Of
so good.
Carbohydrates there.
I started yesterday reading Trish Lee's second Dresden Files book. Hmm. She was very excited and, in fact, got me to read slightly more than I had planned to. I went to bed a little bit later because she got me to read more. I'm really enjoying this enthusiasm she's having for this one.
That's good.
Before, I always kind of had to take her word for it. She would say, and I would believe her, that she was interested in hearing me read to her, but nonverbal communication always just made it sort of seem like she was tolerating me reading to her. This one, I think she was really into. All right, and that's really it, because we're down to, like, less than 20 minutes, so let's do some hat business.
Well, it's a good thing I didn't talk very much about my week. Although
no, I had a lot this time.
Although I did contribute a little bit to the whole Guardians of the Galaxy. But I thought you'd probably seen it and would bring it up.
Oh, Guardians of the Galaxy also taught me a brand new word. I love it. Turd blossom.
That was in the movie?
Right near the end.
It's not a new word for me. I've heard that one before. Although it was funny when it was in the film, now that I remember it.
I did
now.
When I was traveling to and from Virginia and stuff. I was in an airport, and I heard grandmother refer to her grandchild in a completely non-insulting and genuinely, like, affectionate way as turd muffin. And it was so sweet. Anyway, what you got?
Well, the producer asks, how has your relationship with your stuff changed as more stuff has become virtual?
Oh.
Well, I'm not much of a...
You ain't got much stuff?
Well, I used to sort of pride myself on the fact that everything I owned could fit in a car. I mean, when I had to move from one apartment to the other, I could put it in the car and not even fill the car. I mean, there was room for other people to ride in it, go and move. And I liked that about my life. I
find that unsurprising.
I can't quite say that anymore, but
they've made much bigger cars now.
But still... But I'm still very much kind of like that. I throw stuff out or I sell it or I give it away. I don't like to have a lot of things. And as far as virtual stuff, I don't have a lot of, like, I don't have virtual books, for example. I don't have a Kindle or anything like that.
I suspect that's what this question goes to, is books are now online.
Yeah.
TV shows are now online. Mm. Your music, digitize it. I mean, we've got a big case of CDs over there. We don't use them. Anything we wanted, we already ripped to our iPods.
Well, when it comes to movies or TV, we do have a fairly extensive library of things.
See, and we buy DVDs and then literally never open them.
But because we liked to streaming things before it became a big thing, you know, before Netflix was doing it.
You were into streaming before it was cool.
Well, I mean, you know, like we didn't really watch TV on the TV. We watched it on our computer, you know, like back when you could do that for free when it was a network show. And so I suppose it changed that. It changed, we wouldn't go buy the DVD or wait for the DVD to come out. And we might not even rent the DVD. We would just watch it online. And usually that was it. We wouldn't go buy it at all. Although that's not that unusual. I mean, if we buy a movie or a TV show, it's because we want to watch it over and over again on our own time.
Why we buy it, and then we never do.
Well, we did, though. I mean, basically everything that we have in our collection has been watched more than once. But now that the kids are going to be out of the house, I doubt that's going to be the case. But So yeah, it's probably changed that. I think as time goes on, we're going to get rid of that collection, and we probably will only have a very few movies and TV shows that we like to watch over and over in our house, and most stuff we won't do that with anymore. So I guess it's affected that, but not really anything with books or music for us, and nothing else really. But I suppose, yeah, movies and TV.
Well, you don't read very much anyway. I don't know how much music you tend to listen to.
Not fiction, anyway. I don't listen to very much. I don't. I would never. I mean, if I had a device to store music on, I don't even know what I'd put on it.
Yeah, see, that was a huge life changer for me because I love music, and it was sort of a dream come true when that happened because finally I could take. I had a soundtrack wherever I went. I could score my life.
Yeah, I think that's the way most people have felt about it ever since they first were able to do it.
In my mind, not everybody is as conscious of that fact.
Oh, maybe not conscious of it, but it's surely something they do.
I feel like that's sort of what people do. But yeah. And I mean, you know, and I discovered podcasts, much to the detriment of everyone listening, and audiobooks and stuff. And audiobooks have really become amazing. Speaking of which, I was thinking about you the other day, because I was on Audible. Because I've got like 3 credits, and so I was just sort of browsing around. They have huge swaths of genuine radio dramas, usually mostly BBC ones.
Mm-hmm.
You might find that very interesting, because I know you love those.
I do.
I was looking through a section that was a few hundred that was just the science fiction radio dramas.
Mm.
And there was some great looking stuff there. I always do the, you know, bang for my buck kind of thing, and I'm like, oh, but this is only an hour and a half. Whereas I could spend this credit on a 25-hour novel, you know.
Right.
I too often think of the value in terms of minutes, but some of them were very intriguing.
I heard there's a site out there that's like Project Gutenberg, except where people read the books that are...
If there is, I desperately want that. At Project Gutenberg, there are some audio versions.
Oh, okay.
That can be a problem?
Well, the person I heard this from said that since it's volunteers that are reading, sometimes the readers are more...
Yes.
Some readers are better than others.
Well, and sometimes the recording quality.
Yeah, right.
Because in what I'm going to say was probably my final attempt ever to find any Heinlein continuity... Years ago, I bought Methuselah's Children, which is the first appearance of Lazarus Long, and is an old book and is hard to come by nowadays, and I have lost my copy. It's probably somewhere in the house. I can't find it. So one day I find that it's out there, and there's an audio version. So I downloaded it, and I was excited, and I put it on my iPod, and I listened to the beginning, and it's a little old lady... librarian. She it specifically is basically a copy for the deaf, is why she read it, that they got their hands on. Or, sorry, not the deaf, the blind. An audiobook for the deaf is just cruel. Why would you do that?
I don't know.
So mean.
I didn't even get a chance to correct you on that.
Audiobook for the blind. And I was like, good, it works. And so then I didn't listen to it for a while. And then one day I was like, oh, I should listen to this now. And I started... She's terrible, and the sound quality is such that you can barely hear, and there's lots of, like, pops, and, like, there's no shielding, there's feedback and stuff. It was unlistenable.
Mm-hmm.
I got about 5 minutes in, and I'm like, I can't do this.
Well,
and the other thing is, it's Heinlein, and I know enough about Lazarus Long, I'm like, there's gonna be some sex in here. I don't know if I want this little old lady to read that to me.
Well, the way I heard about it was through... a video that Amy Dallin, she was talking about, you know, she does these videos for Geek and Sundry about comic books.
Oh, yeah?
And so she did a video on the origins of modern superheroes. And so it was less about the origin of superheroes as it was about the origin of characters that have a dual identity, you know, that they go do some kind of heroic thing and they have a dual identity. They don't have superpowers or anything.
Yeah.
Zorro
and some shit.
Yeah, exactly. And the Scarlet Pimpernel was before Zorro.
Yeah.
And so she was talking about that, and she was pointing out that she heard it in an audio version that she got from this website that is like Project Gutenberg, except people read them. And she pointed out that some of the books maybe aren't recorded very well, but this version was really good, she thought. But I don't remember what the website's called.
Go find out, because I want to know.
Well, if I find out, I'll send you a link or something. Yeah. I forget what she...
I'm all over that.
She called it, but it's in her video about that subject. I like her. I don't know if you know who she is.
Not at all.
She's really knowledgeable, and I just like listening to her. Well, she does a Hot Pepper game review.
What did you review?
It's an online card game, but it's based in the world
Hearthstone.
Of...
I've seen it. I don't remember anything about the person who reviewed it.
Yeah.
But I definitely have seen it. I'll go back and look. I was really annoyed. The most recent Hot Pepper game review, Aaron, one of the actual founding people, did a dried ghost pepper covered in ridiculous hot sauce. I was like, why would you do that to yourself? But I think she's too used to it now because she actually held up really well.
But it, when she first started, she was... I hesitate to mention this because I think I'm going to talk about something that's sort of a phenomena in YouTube anyway that a lot of people actually like, but that I don't. I'm probably going to come across as kind of a jerk, but...
We got a lot of big YouTube fans listening, so this could be bad.
Well, I find it annoying that a lot of male and female YouTube presenters, both, but a little bit more on the female side than the male side, have a certain way of expressing themselves that's kind of manic and a lot of over-expressing, you know what I'm trying to say?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It bothers me. You know, while I'm watching it, I just can't help thinking to myself, okay, you calm down a little bit. You don't have to act so enthusiastic because it's almost coming across as not genuine. And maybe it is genuine. Maybe they're really that excited, but I mean, it's just calm down a little bit. You can talk a little, your volume can go down a little. You can talk a little slower and you don't have to use your hands so much that I see your hands more than your face. You know what I'm saying?
I absolutely know what you're talking about. I think it's an absolute legitimate thing to dislike. I don't know that I agree with you.
Because it seems like, you know, and men and women both, and they're just like bouncing off the walls while they're explaining something. And I'm thinking, you can calm down a little bit. You don't have to act like you're so enthusiastic about it.
I think it's a particular artistic style that's become a big thing more recently and everybody's using it. And it's just one of those things that's become so culturally present that people don't... I don't think people plan to do it. Because I think that's just a style now that people would say, no, that's just how you make a video presenting thing.
Maybe.
That it's become the norm. Well, but you're right. I mean, it's absolutely affected. I mean, absolutely...
Well, she's a lot less like that than she used to be. And now it seems like she's just... I don't know if I've gotten used to it or if she's actually toned it down so that it's just her natural enthusiasm and not her kind of overdoing it. But also, for a while, it seemed like when, like, Geek and Sundry vloggers in particular, or people from Geek and Sundry, were critical of something...
Wow, for people who rejected you, I'm surprised you spent so much time watching them. Aren't you bitter, or is that it? You're plotting your revenge.
Oh, no. Why would I be bitter? That doesn't make any sense.
Because they spurned you.
They didn't spurn me.
And your love. Oh, you have the show on there?
No.
Then they spurned you.
No, they didn't spurn me.
Spurned.
That sometimes when they address an issue that's going to be controversial, especially something that addresses sexism, they're almost apologetic about it, which... I don't like that. I think a person, when there's that kind of thing out there, that you just should say it. You know what I mean? Just come out and say
it. But as evidenced by the people who aren't apologetic, they're probably just scared of the backlash.
Right.
Because when you're not apologetic, you're the feminist frequency lady, and you get death and rape threats up the wazoo.
But that's, I mean, they're not like that anymore. Felicia Day's not like that. Amy Dallin's not like that. The other, I mean, when they see something that they think is... out of you know, shouldn't have happened, and it's out of line, they'll say so.
Well,
and they're not
good.
Rude about it or anything like that, but they're direct about it, and they're not apologetic, and that makes me feel so good when I see that, and I think that's great. And so, and this Amy Dallin, she's so smart, and she expresses things so well, you know, and at least in terms of the words she uses and everything. I just really like her, and she's getting better and better as time goes on. You can see her skill as a presenter improving. So, but anyway, she did one of those hot pepper reviews, and the only reason I know about it is because, you know,
she had it on her thing.
Yeah, her channel. Yeah. I subscribed to her channel, and I felt so bad for her because it was so terrible. But, you know. But I recommend everyone look her up, and I think she's got a lot of good things to say about comics and things.
So you heard it here. Mary Callan.
Amy Dallin.
Something like that. Speaking of sexism, what we all want you to do is to write the hat. Everybody should do that, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. If you can't be bothered to do that, here's something that takes even less effort that we would like you to do. The sequel to Sin City is coming out. Don't see it. Wow. I don't know what it's like. I just don't want to reward them for the first one. I want to see this movie tank purely as for putative reasons for the first one. And this is not that movie was so bad. That movie was a crime against humanity.
It was bad.
And this is a guy who has watched The Room twice on purpose. That movie angered me.
I mean, you and I remember when we saw it separately, but I remember when you first came to me and said that you saw it and you expressed your feelings about it, and we felt exactly the same about it. Scene for scene, atrocity for atrocity, we felt exactly the same.
Only two movies ever in my life have ended, and I walked out with the people I was with. Neither time was I alone, and we just didn't speak for like 10, 15 minutes. Once was American Beauty, because that movie was amazing. I was a college kid. I now see a lot of problematic things in American Beauty, but for the time, it was world-changing to me, and it was amazing. The other time was Trish and I leaving Sin City, and that one was much more like we had just felt, like, violated and were still in shock.
Yeah.
I believe the first words out of our mouths as we sat at dinner was, I said, "Was that real?" And she said, "Yes." Yes, it was. I was like, I can't believe it. I know. Like, that doesn't happen. There's like, rude and offensive in a way that's minor enough that I just smirk, maybe even chuckle a little. There's rude and offensive that, like, it pisses me off. And then there's this where I'm just, I just feel like I got slapped really hard and I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was.
So don't see the new Sin City. A, it's not going to be good. And B, they shouldn't fucking get money for it. All right? But also, write the hat. We need you all to write the hat. For just one email a week, you can provide a child in need with a podcast to listen to, I guess. Assuming they have a device that'll play the podcast.
No, we didn't say a quality podcast.
Internet access.
We didn't say a podcast that was going to give anything good to their
and
life.
By child,
just podcast.
Yeah, I guess by child in need, I mean person in need of a shitty podcast.
Yeah.
Which there can't be that many of those, but still, help them out.
Yeah.
They're people too.
Right.
You know? So write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Go to Facebook and like the hat there, because that's always fun. Follow me on Twitter @NotQuiteTony. Today I had a free $1 million idea that I gave away to Twitter.
Wow.
Here's my idea.
Okay.
Open up a Vietnamese restaurant, call it Pho Get About It. You're welcome.
And also, the last of our video series is going to be posted tonight. So.
Oh.
Well, not the last, you know, the final.
Of this set.
Of this set.
We'll probably make more.
Yeah, we'll probably make more.
Especially if you beg us to.
Yeah, let us know what you thought of it, and maybe we'll make some more.
And finally, if you want to make the world a better place, make some audiobooks for the deaf. Not because it really will make the world a better place, but because I want to see what that looks like, or sounds like, or you know. Every once in a while, the TV accidentally has the descriptive audio just on. The stuff that you can get for the blind. Just every once in a while. TBS especially seems to do this every once in a while. And it's always very weird. Suddenly it's the same show and you can hear everything, but then some guy's describing what happens on the screen. Very odd. And it's also really fucked up when it's Family Guy. Seriously. I just assumed the descriptive video person was like, this is a typo, right? We can't go from that to that. What? But yeah. Anyway, so have fun. We'll talk to you next week. It's going to get really weird for the next few weeks here.
Yeah, it is.
We're going to be stuck out of time, as it were.
Yep.
But anyway, we will talk to you next week.
Yep.
This part's for the deaf. Just this part, though. Don't listen if you can hear.
Shut up.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.